For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast.
I would like to think that had she come into this world, she would be fierce and an advocate for good things and right things. And so I feel that every time I write about her or do a research project, this is her legacy. And and I am the hands that get to do it.
Dr. Melanie Keep is an early career searcher and senior lecturer in cyber psychology and e-health at the University of Sydney. Her focus is on digital health, particularly on the use of technology to improve healthcare. She's particularly interested in the role of communication between patients and health practitioners for better outcomes. Dr. Keep is also one of the many Australian women who have suffered the loss of their baby due to miscarriage. She wrote about her experiences in a reflection piece for the MJA recently and has very kindly agreed to be my guest today. Thank you for talking to me about this.
That's all right.
This is a beautifully written reflection and it really highlights some issues that I really very much want to talk to you about. So we're talking about miscarriage and the silence about miscarriage in medicine. I was reading your definition of miscarriage and I wondered, are there different kinds of miscarriages? Because I think there's an assumption, probably perpetuated by movies and TV and stuff, that a miscarriage is a very obvious, bloody affair. And that's not true, is it?
That's correct. There are a few different kinds of miscarriages, and our experience the first time round was a missed miscarriage. And so we sort of had very little, no indication that anything was going wrong. I was still nauseous, all of the things that I was kind of pleased to be. And then I was at work and had some spotting and so went straight into panic mode, drove to my GP, was reassured that we're sometimes a little bit of spotting during pregnancy is normal. So let's do a scan and find out. At the time, I thought I was 10 weeks pregnant. And then at the scan the following day, we found out that the gestational sac measured 7 weeks. So we had lost the baby previously. I think, as you say, contrary to what I see in the movies even today, was not the very obvious, very messy experience. It came as a huge shock to the system.
And how did the poor old ultrasound technician tell you what they were finding?
My poor technician, he seemed very young, so I don't know that he had a lot of experience. And again, my experience of ultrasounds during pregnancy were mostly from TV. You go I remember lying there thinking, oh, this is very quiet. Maybe they don't put the sound on when you're here for a pregnancy. And he was scanning for a long time. And I was like, well, this also seems like a long time, but maybe this is just what happens. And so he was moving the wand. And after what felt like ages, he said, oh, I can't seem to find a baby. And then I thought, oh, no. Like one part of me was panicking because maybe I'd lost my baby. And the other part of me thought, have I been wanting this baby so much? I've brought on these symptoms myself. And then he turned and showed me the scan and it showed an empty sac. And he said, I just need to bring in my senior. So he left and came back with the senior. And at that point, I was just sobbing. I think it really hit me what he was saying without saying it. And then the senior confirmed it and I was left to get dressed, and as I was leaving, he turned and just reflexively said, have a good day. In the same way that we do. And I knew what he meant, and I knew he meant so well. And in the grand scheme of things, he could have said a lot worse.
I mean, that's horrendous. Is there enough guidance given to people like your poor old ultrasound technician? Do they get any guidelines about how to break that news or how to react and what they do next when they find that kind of news?
So my understanding is that these guidelines are in process. So the ASUM, the Professional Association for Ultrasound Practitioners, is working on a set of guidelines at the moment. But I think in short, no. And I think that part of that is a reflection of the world gone by and the world that we live in now, that we're more cognizant of the needs of patients and their families. And so, and also as a society, we don't sit well in grief. It's a very uncomfortable space for us. Our health professionals are people at the end of the day. And so that discomfort is something that I'm sure they feel as well.
Let's talk about the 12-week rule, because that's such a, I don't even know if it's a cliche necessarily, but, you know, we're supposed to not tell people we're pregnant until 12 weeks is up. Does that make life pretty difficult if you have a miscarriage before that date and you've told nobody other than your partner, you know? Does the 12-week rule hurt or help?
I think in our situation, the 12-week rule hurt. At that time, I just needed my support network. I needed my friends and my family. And then I had to share the bad news along with the good. And so we never got that time where they were excited with me and going through all of that. Yes. And so every time I needed help or I wanted support, I would have to ask for it. And in asking for it, have to share this really painful experience.
Do we talk about miscarriage more than we talk about stillbirth? Because they both seem to be little pockets of silence in medicine.
I think if you look at legislation, stillbirth comes up more. Part of me wonders how much of this is a little bit easier for people to understand as well, because you can imagine the hurt, the tremendous hurt that a parent feels when you've seen their belly and you've seen pictures of their baby. But that feels a little bit harder when the baby doesn't seem real to you as the family member or the friend.
I am chatting today with Dr. Melanie Keep about her experience of miscarriage and about how the medical profession can do better in helping bereaved parents to work through their loss and grief. Melanie is a member of the board of directors of the Pink Elephants Support Network. Pink Elephants has resources for both doctors and patients at its website, www.pinkelephants.org.au. Melanie also recommends the SANS organisation, that's SANS.org.au, which recently merged with Red Nose Day. SANS has a 24/7 bereavement support line, which you can call at 1300 308 307. Dr. Jade Bilardi wrote an article for The Conversation, which is an excellent resource for doctors. The web address to that article, as well as Melanie's reflection and the other resources, will be in the show notes for this podcast. Back to our chat. You talk in your paper about wanting to exercise as a way of working through your grief and your emotions. What were the barriers to that, and how did you feel about wanting to go to that go-to for you?
The barriers to exercise for me, first and foremost, was being a bit scared. I didn't know what I could do or what I should do other than I wanted to move. So, you know, would my jumping around in a Zumba class be okay, or should I stick to something lighter? And then when I went online to look for guidance, and we have some really good resources, but the guidance there was very vague about exercise. Consistently, it would say, talk to your GP. In one consult, my GP said, no, you should definitely not do anything, just very light walking. In a subsequent consult, they would say, oh, no, this is not like you had surgery or anything, just go on as normal. And then I felt really at a loss. Like, I'm not the expert in this. Yeah. And so that it became hard to navigate what felt right, because I felt like I was afraid of doing something that would hurt my chances of being pregnant in the future, or hurt my chances of being able to carry a pregnancy to term in the future.
Did you end up speaking to a specialist like an OBGYN or?
I am a bit spoiled. I work in academia, and I had colleagues just a building away who were exercise sports scientists and exercise physiologists. Very kind and thoughtful colleague just gave me some things that I could do at home, and it made such a world of difference.
Don't you wish that was available to everybody?
Absolutely.
How would you make this better for women and their partners in the aftermath of a miscarriage? What would you want to see happen straight away?
I would like for there to be a dedicated portal of resources, and those resources would be informational. So they might be videos of the kinds of exercises you can do. It might be some information about the likelihood of a recurrent miscarriage. Those resources would also be people. So psychologists, psychiatrists who have experience in grief counselling and particularly around pregnancy loss. Resources around what you can expect in terms of leave and also a community. Leave is one thing, but accessing that leave requires disclosing that you had a loss, and some workplaces are more supportive than others.
For sure.
And so having a community, you know, just someone to go to say, I really want to access a leave. How did you tell your boss?
Yeah.
Would be really, really helpful.
You clearly went looking for those resources and couldn't find them, yeah?
Yes. And I like to think of myself as having fairly good health literacy, and even then trawling the internet. And I think maybe because of my background, really wanting trustworthy sources, things that I could do that were endorsed by organisations and professionals that I felt were qualified to speak.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I felt that was really lacking. And so then I didn't know what I could trust.
Tell us about your research. What's your field of study?
So my background is in psychology, and I spent a good 10 or so years looking at digital health, and in particular looking at the impact of social media on well-being and the ways in which we can use digital technologies to enhance healthcare and access to healthcare.
And you clearly know of what you speak, because, I mean, this is a situation that would benefit a lot from digital health, I suspect.
Yes, I think so. And particularly because it's such a taboo topic, being able to access information and resources in a way that feels safe is really important. And like we were talking about earlier, evidence-based. And we know from the research that people in general are not very good at taking the time to evaluate the quality of the resources that they find online. And so having clear evidence-based resources up front and centre, easily accessible, would make a big difference.
Are you interested in being involved in developing those resources for people who've suffered miscarriage?
I am. There's a wonderful group of people in Melbourne who are starting that work already. It's a small but growing field of people with very good intentions. I do wonder if life has nudged me in the direction of more research into support following miscarriage. So recently I received a text message from a friend who had read the reflection, and she said that she was very sorry that she didn't support me well at the time, and she knew but she didn't know what to say. And my heart broke for her too, because how hard must it have been to want to do something for somebody that you care about and not know where to begin. And I think that's the assumption I make with all of the people I come across following miscarriage. Nobody has any ill intention. And the second you say something, people want to help. But we are all constrained by not talking about it. And maybe in 2021, we might all feel a little bit braver to be able to share that with each other.
Where are you in terms of the grief process? I've talked to people who've had stillbirths, and they've obviously knew the gender of their child and may have named it and all of those things. You clearly did that as well. You say she and talk about your baby. Where are you in terms of where that child sits in your life?
She is part of the reason I get up in the morning and do what I do.
I
would like to think that had she come into this world, she would be fierce and an advocate for good things and right things. And so I feel that every time I write about her or do a research project, this is her legacy, and I am the hands that get to do it.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for talking so openly about it. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.